All right. This morning, we'll study a bit of Megillas Rus in anticipation of Shavuos coming next week. I want to understand the themes of Rus, but really what's at the heart of Rus? If you have to think about the Megillah, it's a very short one. You read it on the second day of Yom Tov. So what does it talk about? What's the story? It's a nice story, but what really is the story? It culminates in the birth of David, HaMelech, fine. It speaks about loyalty, about chesed, about the revival of a family unit. But what exactly is this, the message? And how is it connected to Shavuos, which is the Yom Tov of Kabbalah HaTorah? So, you know, there are many answers. It happened to make Tzir Chitim the part of the story during the harvest season, which is now Sivan, Iyar Sivan. And David, of course, is born on Shavuos. The whole Torah is chesed. But I want to understand, get to the real root of the story, and start by looking at it in its context, the context that the Megillah establishes at the very beginning, Vahi b'mei Shvot HaShoftim, and it came to pass during the time of the judges, the period of the judges. Now, certainly, most stories generally will give some type of historical context just to acquaint us with the period and be able to put it in a more understandable light. Of course, Chazal say that the Shvat HaShoftim is not just a historical context, but rather it defines the era. It defines the era. And that's why it's important. It's not just a question of telling us when it happened, but tells us the circumstances under which everything happened here. So, we're in the period of the Shoftim. Gemara says that Boaz was the Shofet Ivtzon. Ivtzon ruled for 7 years. He was a Shofet between Yiftach HaGiladi and Elon HaZvuloni. Yiftach, of course, more familiar to us because we read his story in Haftar of Chukas. Elon HaZvuloni, almost completely unknown to us, unless we study Sefer Shoftim. Ivtzon was the Shofet, but the Shoftim were different rulers than we had at other times in our history. I hope to publish my second book next year, maybe a year, year and a half from now, on the Book of Shoftim, Judges for Our Time, because it's a very interesting, very challenging, and difficult to understand period. So many things happen during the period of the Shoftim which are embarrassing to us, not just amongst the people, as we'll see in a moment, but also among the leaders. The leaders seem to have little effect on the people. Chazal say, Vahi b'mei Shvot HaShoftim, so Gemara says, in Baba Basa, Daf Tazvav HaMebez, Mahu Shvot HaShoftim, literally the judging of the judges, doesn't say b'mei HaShoftim, but Shvot HaShoftim, b'mei Shvot HaShoftim. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Dor HaShofet HaShoftov, it was a generation in which the judges were judged. HaShofet Omer Lo, a judge would say to a person, litigant, Tu kisei mi ben shinecho, take that splinter out of your teeth, meshivlo, and he would respond, meshivlohu, he would respond, Tu kora mi ben enecho, take the beam out of your eyes, meaning example of the lost in us today, we don't speak in these terms, but it essentially comes down to, who are you to tell me what to do? You're worse than I am. Or if not, who gave you the authority to tell me what to do? So Dorsha Shofet HaShoftov is a generation in which there's no respect for authority. And in fact, the authority did not command much respect. And that was the reality. The Sefer Shoftim says a number of times, in the days of the Shoftim, Ish HaYosher Beinov Yaseh. Every person did what was right in his own eyes. And no one could tell anyone differently. Now, this was not necessarily a complete reflection on the entire generation. Obviously, they were good people. And it doesn't mean that the Shoftim themselves were not good people. On the contrary, the beginning of Perek Beis, when Boaz is introduced to us, Ushmo Boaz, so Chazal note that whenever you find Ushmo before the name, it means the person is a tzaddik. V'chol makom ha-tzaddikim shmom kodem lohem. Ushmo Boaz, so Boaz was a tzaddik as well. So they were tzaddikim. They were talmid chachamim. And nonetheless, people did whatever they wanted to do. You couldn't tell them anything. Worse, there was no unity amongst the Jewish people. Each tribe kept to itself. Each family within the tribe kept to itself. If there were wars, then the tribe that was attacked had to fight. And, or they had to try to round up other people from other tribes, request volunteers to assist them. As if, you know, they lived in a lot, so why should it bother them if there's war in Lebanon? It doesn't affect them at all. And that was the nature of the generation. If it didn't affect them, then they didn't care. But ish hayosher bein av yasa. Every person did what himself. What's in it for me? Which is a sad commentary on Jewish life, but not something that with which we're unfamiliar. It does exist. Each tribe had its own leadership, its own courts, its own army. National leadership, Rav Avinir writes, was ad hoc. It was only the Shofet existed and ruled on an ad hoc basis, as needed, and his reign, therefore, was marked by that type of temporary and, I don't want to say inconsequential, but let's say not as meaningful leadership as you would find in other periods in Jewish history. Certainly when you had a melech, when you had a king, as the monarchy begins in the Sefer Shmuel. There was also the occasional civil war amongst the tribes. Wars between the tribes, wars of one tribe against another, sometimes wars within one tribe as well. The greatest people did not want to rule or get involved. We have that today as well on occasion. Politics. Get involved in politics. Oh, I'd rather sit and learn. But of course, politics is the art of governance, of creating a functioning and functional society. So it's at the very heart of creating a total existence. The attitude, Rav Avinar, is very interesting because these things persist throughout human history. It was an attitude of who needs government anyway. We can rule ourselves. Good people can rule themselves. And he mentions, very interestingly, that's basically how they live in Yeshub, amongst the Yeshuvim. There's not one Yeshuv, and some of them are big. And Ariel has 5,000 people, 6,000 people. Others even larger. Is there a police force in any of the settlements? There are security apparatus to protect against Arab attacks. But is there a police force that governs relations between the people living there? I don't think there's one police force in any of the settlements. They don't think they need it. I can't say they don't have any problems, but there's a problem. They resolve it internally. But it's not as if they have to protect each other from other people within the settlement. It doesn't exist. So he says that notion of anarchy, and the period of the Shofim was a period of anarchy, it's one that prevails a lot. There's always a segment of human society that favors that, but can't submit to any authority. They are the anarchists. And he said, that's an ideal. The Navi actually speaks about such a situation in life, when everyone will be involved in Das Hashem. So in fact, there'll be no need to have external braking mechanisms on the darker impulses of human nature. Such a thing can exist. Of course, it can't exist in our day. In our day, it's the day of, as we say in Avos, Til mole mo ro'o, ish Yisrael chayim blo'o. But for the fear of government, a person would swallow his friend alive. Nothing would inhibit anyone from just taking and killing and pillaging and marauding. So have a mispalel b'shlomo shel malchus. You should always pray for the welfare, for the peace of the government. It's the government and the threat of the heavy hand of government. That is to say, law and courts and prison that protect each of us from the other and ensure some type of domestic tranquility. But the period of Shoftim was not that, not on that level. It was a period of anarchy. And there was also no spiritual leadership. Again, there were tzaddikim, the Tamei Chachamim, the people learning Torah, but this is typified by a statement in the Tana de Eliyahu, which were the statements of Eliyahu. Tana de Eliyahu was the teachings of Eliyahu Hanavi. So he came down and taught in a dream to Rav Hanan, one of Amoron. So it's in Perigid Aleph, and he gives a mashal what the Jewish people were like in the days of the Shoftim, like a king who had many servants, and the servants were constantly angering the king, pilfering, stealing, and this and that. So he kept punishing them, and then they plead for help, and he'd bring them back, and that's basically the way we were. And it was terrible suffering. Osvan Arbom Ushnaim Elo Shenehergu Bema Yiftach HaGiladim, Mipnei Ma Nehergu. The 42,000 Jews were killed during the reign of Yiftach HaGiladi. Why were they killed? So he explains. But think about it for a moment. 42,000 Jews were killed during the reign of Yiftach HaGiladi. In 60 years of the State of Israel, they've lost maybe, I think, 23, 24,000 people in all the wars in the Torah combined, maybe 25. 42,000 people killed during the reign of Yiftach. 70,000 people killed during the crisis of the Pilegesh Begivah. We're talking about massive loss of life because of the instability of society. See, every life is precious. And 24, 25,000 Jews, last 60 years, a terrible loss. But the numbers are staggering during the days of the Shoftim in a shorter period of time in which these incidents took place. 42,000 here, 50,000 there, 70,000 during another period. Of course, it all pales before the Holocaust. It's true. The Holocaust is staggering, astronomical, difficult to deal with. But Mipnei Mahem Nargu, why were they all killed? So now the Tana de Eliyahu explained as follows. That there was Sanhedrin Gedolah that Moshe and Yeshua established. Pinchas was among them. And the Medrash here says they should have lifted up their, they should have girded their loins, v'chazu b'chol ayaros Yisrael. And they should have traveled. The Sanhedrin should have uprooted themselves from their base, wherever it was during this time, it was in Shiloh, and traveled through every city in Israel. Yom Echad l'Lachish, one day in Lachish. Lachish right in the center of the country, where today Kiryat Gat is around there. Yom Echad l'Beit El, another day in the Shomron. Yom Echad l'Chevron, go another day to Yudah. Yom Echad l'Yerushalayim, v'chein b'chol mekom os Yisrael. So too, they should have uprooted themselves and spread out each day, go to a different town or village in the land of Israel. V'ilamdu os Yisrael derech eretz. And it would teach the Jewish people how to live. Teach them Torah. Teach them Midos. Give them Musar. Vishano, Vishtaim, or Vishalosh. And in a year, or two, or three, they would have been able to travel throughout the land, Adshe Yisyansi, Yisrael Bartzom, until we become settled. Not just settled physically, but settled spiritually. We would know how to take the ideas of Torah and implement them in the land of Israel. Kedesha Yisgado V'Yiskade Shmo Shalakadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olamos Kulon Shabar Misol Palom V'Atzofo. So God's name would be magnified and sanctified throughout the world that He created, from one end to the other, because of the nature, the holiness, the purity of the Jewish faith that would be established. V'Hein Lo Asuchem. They did not do that. El Kishen Nichnasu L'Artzom. When they entered the land of Israel, each person entered his own vineyard and made his own wine and tilled his own soil. The Omrim, and they would say, Shalom Aleich Nafshi, peace be upon me, my soul. Meaning, as long as I'm fine, what do I care anybody else? Yes, of course. He learned. He sat and learned. He sat and learned. For those great people, Ibsen was a tzaddik. Boaz was a tzaddik. The Shoftim were generally more righteous than the rest of the population. Nonetheless, they didn't see the need to go out to others. Kidei shalom harbos alena satara. Who wants to be involved? They did not want to overburden themselves. They just said, I am who I am, and that's it. Everyone is responsible for themselves. Sure. The Shoftim? The Shoftim, by and large, were appointed by acclamation of the people. always in response to a particular need, usually an invasion by the Plishtim, by Ammon, by Moab, some other tribe, and then the people would coalesce, and they would say, who would lead us? And a person would come forward, and he would say, I'll lead. So Gidon took over, Zvorah Hanaviyah took over, Shimshon HaGibor his own parsha, because he was a shofet, but he did his own thing completely, even in terms of warfare, fought by himself. So that's how they were. What's that?
No
prerequisites. Well, most of the shoftim were righteous people. Some of them were involved in Torah as well, but it varied. You know, Yiftach b'doro, Kishvul b'doro. You have to treat them the same. The Yiftach, you know, was on one level. Bedon on another level. Gidon was not held to be the greatest Talmud Chacham. But the shoftim tried. I mean, we respect them. But it's a generation that the generation was much too unruly to appreciate any type of leadership. Unless there was a crisis, and then you saw, the Navi says, Vatishkot Oretz Arvim Shana, Vatishkot Oretz Yasrim Shana, 40 years there was peace, 20 years there was peace. Something. Well, I wasn't going to say that, but if you want to say that, we can.
I remember when we had the Yom Kippur War in the community. People who were never involved as a Jew all of a sudden came out to support labor.
That's right.
And now they're hidden again, the vast majority of the people.
Right, that's correct. That's crises always bring people out. That's why the Holocaust always remains a unifying element for the Jewish people. Because we coalesce around shared victimization and the potential for future victimization. That's what drives people together. But it's not enduring. Because if a person feels, Shalom Aleich Nafshi, I'll just leave them. Be part of those people. Are these people chasing them across the globe? I'll leave them. Well, they assimilate. Sometimes they're able to leave, sometimes they can't leave. But nonetheless, they are... They shirk their responsibilities, the historic role, and they check out of the Jewish people. But the Sanhedrin, the Tana de Belio says, did not ride the circuit. They weren't interested. We're talking the great people. It's enough, you know. You could get burnt out too, or frustrated. You know, Jews can be a frustrating people. Ever noticed that?
Yeah.
I noticed that. Jews can be frustrating people, and you tire of success, and you say that there's no hope. What's the point? I remember in the early 80s, before I embarked on a career in the Rabbanus, I remember one of my chaverim, who's not a Rabbanus in Yeshiva, said to me, I'll tell you the secret of the rabbinate. Can I let you in on it? Talking about the Jews. It's hard to do. No. He said, the secret is don't try to change people. Don't try to change people. Because people come with their history, with their baggage. All you have to do is present the Torah in the best, most entertaining, and most wholesome light. And then how it's going to affect them depends more on them than on you. So just focus on the delivery. What's that?
Every relationship.
That's true. And gradually, either they'll respond, they won't respond. And whether they respond is not always up to whoever the teacher, the speaker, the rabbi is. There's a lot of things going on within all of us. So the focus of the rabbi should be to teach, period. They didn't do that. Very interesting. I mentioned in one of the early sessions of the lectures, the series on the history of Israel, that Rav Kook and his ideological adversary, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, Zichronim of Racha, they embarked on such a campaign in the fall of 1913. They left Yerushalayim. I think Rav Kook was still in Yafo at the time. He was in Yafo. Rav Zonnefeld was the head of the old Yishuv in Yerushalayim. And they embarked on a two-month campaign, visiting dozens of Yishuvim throughout Israel, including the most secular Yishuvim that didn't have a shul even, that didn't have a kosher kitchen. And they spent a day or two in each place. It was called the Tshuva Campaign of 1913. And it had a remarkable impact on the people who saw Rav Kook, the godless of Rav Kook, and the greatness of Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, just talking to people on a one-to-one level, a few other Rabbanim with him as well, but talking on a one-to-one level, not preaching down to them, but showing that they have a shared interest in building a holy community. So you ask, why didn't it happen after that? They finished in, I think it was after Hanukkah, late 1913. They planned it again for the next fall. All right? None of you are old enough to remember what happened. World War I broke out in August of 1914. Rav Kook was caught in Europe, could not get back to Israel for 5 years, spent the war in Switzerland first, then in England, and by the time he got back, the whole climate had changed, and the opportunity was gone. But nonetheless, there was such a thing. Here, in the period of Shoftim, it did not exist at all. It was Shalom Alayis Nashi. So the question becomes, if the Jewish people become so scattered and so fractured, what does God have to say about all this? What does God do in order to bring the Jewish people together? Vayhi b'meshvat ha-shoftim, what does God do in such a society? Vayhi ra'av baretz. He sends a famine. Why did he send a famine? Yisurin, suffering, is not necessarily a punishment. In fact, there's a different word for punishment. And that's onesh. Onesh is a punishment. What are yisurin? No? What's the root of the word? Musar. Musar. Teaching. Ashreish, asher tiyasrenu ko. Mitarascha tolamdenu. The Shir Shalom on Thursdays we say this. Fortune is the person, so tiyasrenu, we understand as chastised. But tiyasrenu means gives musar. Gives a teaching. So understand something. Yisurin are teachings. No one looks for yisurin, of course. Try to hide from them as well. But if one comes upon us, so we embrace it, or are supposed to embrace it, in order to extract the lesson from it, and internalize the lesson as well. If we're fragmented as a people, what's going to bring us together? That's it. You could say a love, shared suffering, which is true, but there's a broader way of understanding it. What brings a fractured people together? That's it. So then you have to do things for other people. You have to look to another in order to both help and be helped. The ra'av produced, at least for most of the population, the notion that they're one bond, that all of them together. What brings the... It's very interesting. Again, we're too close to the event. We spent the last week immersed in all the tzaras of the 1990s, for tonight's part 12 of the history of Israel. But there was one very interesting outcome of all the terror and all for Chaim Lutzen, all the Jews that were killed. The dozens and dozens of chesed organizations that arose in memory of the victims of Arab terror. Where it's the Kobi Mandel Foundation, they have a sign on the bulletin board for them. They have summer camps they run for the siblings of terror victims. Kobi Mandel was killed, Hashem Yikom Damo. Malki Roth was killed in the Zavara bombing. Her parents established Karen Malki, which is an organization that tends to special needs children, handicapped children, because she was a high school student, I think, or early college. That was what she did. She worked with handicapped children. So Karen Malki exists. The Weiss's established Ohel Ari, the Kiruv Center in Ranana. There's dozens of organizations like this. Rachman al-Islam, they arose in the wake of all the terror. So if we're a divided people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us in his own ways opportunities for chesed. Chesed binds us. By Hira of Baretz. Once there's a Rav, then by definition we have to seek out. Some will have more produce, others less. You have to work at some means of distribution, some means of assisting the poor. That already makes us one nation. The Rav, Yisurin generally bring out something else as well. Tefillah. Vayhi Rav Baretz. So forget the story for a moment. What happens? People start davening. People see that there's something unusual happening here. That there's no grain growing. There's no food that is prevalent. in what should be a fertile, prosperous land, makes people pray. It turns to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That itself is a unifying element. Chazal say, I spoke about this a few months ago on a Friday night, about the Sefer Refuos. It was a book apparently written by Shlomo HaMelech that had the cures for every disease, called the Sefer Refuos. And Chizkiyahu HaMelech, one of the things that he did is he hid it. He hid the book. His gonez, the Sefer Refuos, the Gemara Pesachim says, Daf Nun Vav. Why? So Rashi says, Kidei Sheivakshu Rachamim. People got sick, they looked in the book for the cure, went to the doctor, didn't need God anymore. No. They have to turn to Kadosh Baruch Hu for assistance in time of need. Well, man starts to feel that he's in control. So Rav brings that about as well, makes us want to be mispalel a little more, makes us closer to Hashem. I remember in a previous life when I was a lawyer, I had a case once. I was a young kid who was going to be sentenced to prison. He pleaded guilty. I forget what he did. He robbed someone or he assaulted someone. I don't quite remember. But his mother came to court hoping that he would be sentenced to probation, not to jail time. And I was a lawyer. And we're going in for the sentencing. In fact, they're taking him out of the jail. He's already in jail. And she said to me, forgive my language, may Jesus be with you. So I said to her, let's hold off on the Jesus talk for a few minutes, all right? And we'll see what we can do. You know, it's faith in God's hands. So now I'm in a dilemma, of course, because if I get him out, it's Jesus. What do I do? If I don't get him out, it's the Jew lawyer who did it. Once again, they're sticking it to all good Christians. Of course, I'm bound by my ethical obligations to do what I can. So whether God was with me, and I don't know, but the judge let him out and sent him to probation. And on the way out, I preempted her, and I said, God was good to you. God was good to you today. The point is, in an ace sorrow, people turn to God. People turn to God. That's what a rav is. In a rav, in a famine, it's going to make us daven a little harder and relate to God a little more intensely. And of course, a rav is also a catalyst for tshuva. The catalyst for tshuva. Except for, sad to say, one of the notables of the land of Israel, and that is this ish, Vayelech ish, mi bezlechem yudol agur b'sdei mo'av, hu v'shto shnei v'nav, except for this one person, Avimelech. Rashi says he was very wealthy, Hanas Hador, one of the leaders of the generation, v'yotza meretz Yisrael l'chutz l'aretz. He left the land of Israel, went to exile, went to Moab, with Netzaro Sa'ayin, because of his miserliness. Shahisaino Tsara Bani Mabam Ladochako, because he was very greedy, had a narrow eye. Cheap. Didn't want to give people who came to him for assistance. So the famine was designed to bring us together. Avimelech Ra'a Velawakah Musa. He saw it and he said, I'd better hightail it out of here. Chazal say in the Medrash, why was he punished? Because when the famine came, he said, Achshav, call Yisrael, Mesavim, Pishkin. All the Jews are going to come to my door now. They're going to want everything that I have. Like a Sunday morning in Tina. They're going to surround us. Constantly, every 10 minutes, someone's going to come to my door. Zebekupasov. This one is his basket. This one is his basket. Amadu Varach lo mitnehem. He stood up and ran away. He ran away? Well, that was Avimelech. That attitude, of course, cannot endure in Jewish life. So therefore, he had to die. He had to die. And Vayomer Avimelech, Ishnami, he died in Moab because his kind will destroy Klal Yisrael. So better that he leave, because we don't want that attitude in Eretz Yisrael, in the Jewish community. And once he leaves, better he cease to exist, so others will not learn from it. So really, in Yehuda, in the rest of Israel, people did come together. There was a greater sense of unity as a result of the Rav. Strange, though, how the catalyst for the story come out of that environment, the environment of a person who left, who stayed away, who decided not to share in the suffering of other people, but in fact went to carve out his own destiny. So chesed is the means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us in order to bring us together and become better Jews. There's something else as well. There's another meaning. So now let's look at Paragraph. Kula Naomi, Modali Isha. It's nice. We have some Naomis here. We have some Ruthers here this morning. Kula Naomi, Modali Isha, Ishki Borchayim, Mishpachas Elimelech, Ushmo Boaz. Naomi was a relative to a man, a great man, a warrior, wealthy, from the family of Avimelech. He's really Avimelech's nephew. Naomi and Boaz were first cousins. Ushmo Boaz. His name was Boaz. Now, you recall, of course, from the end of, end of Perek Aleph, Naomi was in desperate straits when she came back. Desperately. Question is, Pasuk Beis, she says to Ruth, or Ruth says to Naomi, "I've nothing to eat, I'll go to the field and see what I can collect." The Matnos Aniyim, the gifts to the poor that every Jewish field owner has to leave. Leket, Shit, Kopeya, etc. Why didn't Boaz reach out to Naomi, his kinswoman? Why didn't he do that? It seems, on the surface, even the great Boaz, Ish Gibor Chayil, Mimishmachas Elimelech, even he didn't seek out Naomi. Nor did she seek out him. Perhaps she was too embarrassed to reach out to him. But in fact, that was typical of the door. Shalom Aleich, Nafshi. In the words of the Talmud of Eliyahu, as long as I'm all right, you know, if someone needs me, I'll respond to them. I'm not going to go looking for chesed, unlike a chesed committee, of course. I'm not going to go looking for it. Or, if we want to be more charitable to Boaz, Chazal say that the day Naomi returned from Moab was the day on which his wife died. So in fact, he was Osuk be'Evlo, he was involved with his own mourning, Osuk be'Sarrow, and therefore he didn't really have any time to devote to Naomi and her welfare. Boaz was 80, Rus was 40. But Tomer Rus ha-Moaviel Naomi, El-Chono ha-Sodeh ba-Laktov ha-Shibolim. Rus says to Naomi, "I'll go into the field, I'll gather the sheaves, achar shem tzachem beinov, I'll find favor in the field of the owner, v'tomeh lo luchi viti." And Naomi said, "Go, my daughter." The Medra says here, by the way, that up to 40 you're called viti, bas, a daughter. Life begins at 40, no daughter anymore, then you're on your own. V'telech v'tavo, v'telakeit basod acharei katsirim, so she goes. And she enters the field, and she gathers after the other reapers. Vayikar mikra, and a coincidence happens. Of all the fields in Yudah, all the fields in Beit Lechem. Why is Beit Lechem called Beit Lechem? Exactly. It's a very fertile land. If I'm not mistaken, at the very beginning of the, at the very beginning of the Megillah, Vayelech Ish mi Beit Lechem Yehudah. Why Beit Lechem Yehudah? To distinguish it from Beit Lechem HaGalili. The Galil also had a town that was called Beit Lechem. They see it from Tzipori, the remnant of the town. Any fertile area is called Beit Lechem, literally the house of bread. This is a Beit Lechem in Yehudah, this is a Bethlehem, Beit Lechem, this is a Beit Lechem in the Galil. So, of all the fields in Beit Lechem, she wanders onto the field of Naomi's relative, Boaz. What's Vayika Mikrael? So this is point number two. To bring us together, Hashem gives us opportunities for chesed. But when we're not worthy, when the Jewish people are disunited, and fragmented. How does God relate to us? So we relate to each other through chesed. How does he relate to us? Through mikra, through coincidences. We don't see the Yad Hashem directly, but to look for it. To see coincidences, strange occurrences. Rav Avinah writes, I never heard this before. If you rearrange the letters of mikra, it spells out rock, mashup. God, but we don't see that it's from God. because we're too busy in our own world. One mikre, Rus wanders onto Boaz's field. The second mikre, did Boaz usually go to his fields? If sons of Boaz, he's a shofet hador. He's involved in judging and ruling the people. Was he accustomed to overseeing his fields? No, absolutely not. Maybe felt though, Vayikar Mikreho, after Shiva, he was away from his business interests for 7 days to go investigate what is happening. He went there. Odd that he went. Even more odd, he notices her. You think there's only one person collecting, one oni collecting in the Boaz's fields? Rav, I assume not. Vihine Boaz Bomi Beis Lechem. Boaz came from the town, center of town, the area of the municipality. Vayom HaKatrim, he says to his reapers, Hashem Yimachem, God should be with you. Vayomru Lo Yivrecha Hashem. And he answered them, God should bless you. Vayomer Boaz L'Naron Yitzav HaKatrim. He said to his young lad, who was overseeing the reapers, Yimia Narazos, who's this young woman? The young 42. Who's this young woman? It's also odd. It's odd enough that he's there. It's even more odd that he should notice Rus. L'miha narazos. And he notices her. Even more odd. Bayan hanar anitzov ala kotrim bayomar. So that same nar answered na'ara mu'aziyohi hashova im na'omi mizdei ma'av. She was a Moabite young woman who returned with Naomi from Shvei Moab. Of course, everything comes together now for Boaz, because he recognizes that not only is this woman, not only strengthens there, but and that he recognizes her, but it turns out to be a relative, because Machlon Chilion was cousins. First cousins once removed. Cousins. And he sees that his cousin, by marriage, so to speak, is in the field. He's there. None of this is lost on Naomi. So Ruth has a whole dialogue with Boaz, and he says to her, Haloshen Pasaches, Haloshamat Biti, Al Tochi Lukobis Vacher, never go again to another field. The Gamal Savri Mizet, don't even leave now. Choshu Bakin Narasol, stay with my other female workers, aides, collectors, etc. She thanked him and asked him, why did I find favor in your eyes? I'm a stranger. And he says, who gave, who godly call us here, I heard all about what you did to your mother-in-law, Naomi. But you abandoned your parents. Rus Chazal said was the daughter of Eglon Bas Moab, princess. Her father was the king of Moab. She left him, left his religion, left her country, left the palace. But Kelchi El Ama Shelo Yadat Moshe Shom, you left everything that you had to join your forlorn mother-in-law in a strange land. Yishalei Hashem, Paleh. God should pay you back for all your deeds. Tzvi Maskutech Shleimo, etc. None of this is lost on Naomi, because the sensitive Jew is trained to speak out the Yad Hashem, especially in circumstances of hestaponis, where because of our deeds, God's presence is hidden from us. So Ruth comes back, and she tells Naomi what happened, and the Pasuk Yitzes, Vatom Hashem Rish Asher Asisi Imo Hayom Boaz. And Naomi says in Pasuk Chav, "Vatomer Naomi l'chalo so baruchu l'Hashem." Blessed is he to God. Last year, by the way, we spoke about the frequency of the use of the Shem Hashem. How it reflects on the level of people, the closeness of God. That Shem Hashem is shogu b'fiyah. Baruchu l'Hashem ashelo azav chazdoes achayim. What can I say? Blessed is God that he did not abandon his kindness to the living and the dead. Naomi said this man's a relative of ours. He's a redeemer. And now she puts into effect her plan. So Torah is a strange thing, by the way, in Pasuk says, in Pasuk Chav. But Tome Nami, Nami said to her daughter-in-law, L'chalasa, Baruch Hu Hashem, Asher lo azav chazdu asachinus aneisim, blessed is God who did not forsake his kindness to the living and the dead. And then Vatome lo Nami, she said to her, Nami said to her, Karav lono ishmigal leinuhu, the man is related to us. What's strange about the Pasuk? It says Vatome twice, without any intervening response from Ruth. First she says to her daughter-in-law, and then she says, so why say it twice? He could have said, Baruch Hu Hashem Asher lo azav chazdu asachem v'tzaneisim, karav lano ishmigalainu. What's the two Vatomes? It looks like it's two separate conversations. She says first to her, Baruch Hu Hashem, remember, Ruth is a Georah, she's a convert, she's a stranger. Not only to the land, but she's a stranger to the ideas of the Jewish people. Naomi uses this as a Tomer to explain to her a fundamental principle of Jewish life. When we are not completely worthy, so God deals with us in the Mikra. And that's what Naomi wanted Ruth to know. Baruch Hu Hashem, you should think it's not coincidence that these things happen. It's not chance. It's God Asher lo azav chazdo, who never abandons us and never forsakes opportunities for chesed to be bestowed upon the living and the dead. Never. God deals with us b'mikre, and therefore we seek out coincidences, hints, chance meetings, opportunities for chesed. And then she says to her, in a separate conversation, Vatome lo Naomi, Karav lono hishmigalainuhu. It's a separate conversation, because with this, she hatches her plan for Ruth to have her nocturnal meeting with Boaz, which happens in Perek Gimel, and then Boaz accepts responsibility for her, and by extension for Naomi as well. What's that? When we step in and we perform acts of chesed on our own, then Hashem responds to us in a more open manner. And that is the creation of Malchus Beis David. Yes. It is Hashgacha Pratis. That's right. It is Hashgacha Pratis, except for one thing. Hashgacha Pratis relies on Bechira, but a person can be maneuvered in a certain way. A mikra relies on Bechira too, but in a much more blatant way. Alright? If a person doesn't want to see it, then he won't see it. Hashgacha Pratis is almost, one is maneuvered into that situation. I'm not saying your Bechira is taken away, but I'm saying is you're almost an object, rather than a, well, that's what happens, of course, but you're much more of an object being led than the initiator, the actor. As opposed to Vayikin Mikreho, then it's in response to your own conclusions and the philosophical level that you're on. If you see it, you'll recognize it. If you don't see it, then you'll just say, gee, this is interesting, and then just move on. The famous Medrash, mentioned a few times, Moshe Rabbeinu, in Perek Gimel of Shmos, when he sees the burning bush, and he says, "Asur no vo'eres hamare hagadol hazeh, madua lo yevarasne." He says, "Let me depart, asur no, and see and look at this wondrous sight. Why isn't the bush burning?" The Medrash says the bush didn't just burn for Moshe; the bush burned for everyone on that highway. Everyone. Everyone else looked at the burning bush and said, wow, isn't that interesting? I have to get to work. I have to get home. I'm tired. My show is coming on. Moshe said, Asurano, let me depart from what I'm doing because this is something unusual. It should catch my attention. That was Moshe Rabbeinu. Asurano, a person who notices the Mikre and sees the Yad Hashem, is a different Madrega entirely. When we step in and we respond to those mikros, respond to them, Mikrim. And we respond in such a way that it encourages us, catalyzes us to reach out to other people. And chesed, responsibility one for another. In our Arevus, which is the heart of Klal Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds in the most open manner. What's the most open manner? The Shai Holiness David. From the experience, the nocturnal visit of Ruth and Boaz, they marry in the fourth parak. Boaz dies, by the way, that very night, right after he gets married. But Ruth is able to have a child from him. And that child, Salmon, Yishai, Oveg, Yishai, David. Different world. Something happens that really is the ultimate mikra, the ultimate coincidence. And by coincidence, I mean here something completely unexpected and unanticipated, and yet results in the greatest benefit to Klal Yisrael. I think this is the secret of the Megillas Rus, looking at the twin prongs to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to Klal Yisrael. When we're not the worthiest, we're not on the highest level, and we're not always conscious of His presence, and that is to send us through Yisurin opportunities for Chesed, and then to reach out to us the Derech Mikre, that will look at the world, reach out to us the Derech Mikre, look at the world in a little different way, a little different way, so we'll be more sensitive to the Yad Hashem, and therefore more aware of our own responsibilities. If that's the secret of Megillas Rus, so now I hope you'll understand why it's read on Shavuos, on the Yom Tov of Kabbalas HaTorah. All the other reasons that I mentioned notwithstanding, that's all true. But Kabbalas HaTorah requires that we become proper vessels in order to receive the Torah. That's the whole period of the Omer, which we're experiencing now. Each day, to think of a different Nido, rise a little level, Madrega by Madrega, until we're worthy to stand at the foot of the mountain again and to receive the Torah. That only happens when we see the Yad Hashem, and that only happens when the opportunities given to us to help His creation are both seen and seized. It's to see the opportunity, but to seize it and to take advantage of it. And that is something that is at the heart of Jewish life, and I think at the heart of the Megillah as well. And when Jews put on those lenses and were able to recognize the Yad Hashem in those circumstances, they become a different people. Not only relating to each other, but relating to God, a different nation. In fact, that's what they recognize in this story. In Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Dalet, but Tomarna Hanashim Ol Naomi, the women said to Naomi, after all this happened, after Boaz and Ruth married, Vayitain Hashem Lo Herayom Atelet Bein, God, she conceived and she gave birth to a son, and then the woman said to Naomi, Baruch Hashem, blessed is God, Asher Lo Hishbiz Loch Goelayom, God did not cause the Goel to cease, meaning not to appear. Today, the Karei Shmo B'Yisrael, that phrase, by the way, we use whenever we name a child, both boy and girl, the Karei Shmo B'Yisrael, his name should be called in Israel, it's taken from this Megillah. The Karei Shmo B'Yisrael means now the Jewish people survive. Now there's continuity to our existence. Now we'll be able to go on. What ensures our survival, physically, spiritually, is when we're able to look at events and we say, Baruch Hashem, Asher Lo Hishbiz Loch Goel Hayom. Or like Boaz, or like Naomi said, Baruch Hu Hashem, Asher Lo Azav Chasdo Asachem Esamesim. Or even as Boaz said, to Rus, Yishalem Hashem Kolech, God should repay you. When God's presence is made real to us, is made manifest to us, then we become worthy of a physical existence, of the spiritual existence, of the continuity of Jewish life. Yes.
Because a lot of Jews don't pay the verses of the letter, and Gerka says that it's limited. And then once she gives birth, you don't hear anything about her anymore, no one can settle her, and so raises the child.
Yes. Well, actually, we discussed a few years ago, because it's interesting, the Megillah mentions Yulad Bein L'Na'ami. Should have said Yulad Bein Rus. Right? That's nice to the grandparents. But you didn't have to go through the labor and delivery. If you keep some credit for the actual mother, no. The Megillah says Yulad Bein L'Na'ami. Why? Because we're not talking about the physical birth. We're talking about the one who saw the opportunity and took advantage of it and was able to guide events in such a way as to produce this outcome. And who was that? That was Naomi. That wasn't Rus. Rus herself became an object. And we gave a shiur a few years ago. If you look at Perek Gimel, when Naomi has a plan to dispatch Rus to the Goren at night to surprise. Startle Boaz! A unmarried woman visits him in the granary in the middle of the night. You look at Pasuk Gimel, it says, V'rachatz, V'sach, you bathe, you put on perfume, some simosayach alayach, you'll put on your nicest clothing, V'arada tagoren, and you'll go down to the threshing floor, to the granary. What's the kri? The kri is V'arada, you'll go down. What's the ksiv? What does the Pasuk actually say? It's with a yud. The erodity, as if it says, I will go down. It's really Naomi. Rus is acting in place of Naomi. Same thing in the next pasuk. V'gili, you'll go, V'gili's margalosech, V'shachof. You'll uncover his feet, and you'll lie down next to him. V'shachof is the tree. The pasuk actually says, V'shachof ti, and I will lie down. All right? But tomer eleho, kol asher tomri, Eli is also read but not written. Why? It's everything you said. Because you are the actor here. You're the one, you're the prime mover of events. That's why you are Bain Lami. We all, yeah. Yes, very peculiar. Why didn't, yes, I know. Like a, literally, a lady of the evening, overnight. Yeah. We actually discussed that the year before. We discussed the point of Naomi's, it's a very short book, Megillas Rus. You were here. I don't remember. It's the, what was the question again? That's right. No, it's longer than that. It's maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Tell me the question again. Tell me question again. Oh, why, right. So it's because of, there's a whole underlying dynamic here in the Megillah, because Rus was a Moaviyah. She was afraid to approach Boaz directly because it wasn't well known. Malacha, a Moabite man can't marry a Jew, a Jewess. But that halacha wasn't known. Torah says, Lo Yevo Amoni Moavi B'Kal Hashem. They thought it applied to everybody. Malacha wasn't well known. So the initial reaction, in fact, that was the reaction of his brother, Tov. All right. Once he said Pasuk Hey that you'll get the field from Naomi and from Rus, you'll acquire Rus as well. V'yomar HaGoel Lo Uchal L'Gali. Hen Hashkisas Nachosi. I don't want to marry her. She's a Moabite. It's not accepted. So a direct approach would not have worked. Boaz had to be aware of the coincidences as well. Of everything that happened here, the field, he's there, she's there, he spots her for some reason. She's Naomi's relative. So Naomi wanted to do this as in fact what she saw is that Boaz was not acting on his own. He did not, she knew. Boaz also knew. Was well known. Boaz knew. What's that? That's a different issue. We also took that up. Where's everybody been all these years? Right. The question, she converted actually in Moab, but a little different technique then. Clearly, that when she came back to Beis Lechem, then the conversion was reaffirmed. But it's not just a question of conversion. It's a question of being a Moabite woman. An Ammoni and a Moavi, like a Mitzri, are in a different position than the other Ger Giyaris. Different. And Adomi as well. A different position. No, I'm sorry, just Moab, Ammon, and Mitzrayim. A different position. So that was the issue. Not whether she was Jewish or not, but whether in fact she could marry a Jew. In fact, even in David's time, Gemara says this, according to Medrash, that right, they said to him when he became a king, there was a whole discussion, a whole deliberation in the Beis Medrash. Before we determine whether he's eligible for kingship, let's see whether he's eligible to marry a Jewish woman, because he depended on Moabite. No, they decided. They knew what the halacha was. Amoni v'lo Amonis, Moavi v'lo Moavis. Yeah. Society didn't know. It's a strange thing. Ah, so what it did was remind him, like shock therapy. It just reminded him that this is what has to be done, and then he decided to take the initiative. Because again, if you look at the world of Shalom Aleich Nafshi, as long as no one says anything, I'll do my own thing. You know, why get involved? Why look for that controversy? Avoid controversy. Why look for the controversy? Enough will find you anyway. He did nothing. And we said the way to shock him was not a direct approach. The way to shock him is to send Rus, who realize that there's more at stake here, and there's a different dynamic at work. So in fact, what happens is that when situations arise in which we take advantage of the opportunities, the chesed that God sends our way to bind us as a people and to see the Yad Hashem, then that's what makes us more fitting and more faithful Avdei Hashem, and of course more worthy recipients of the Torah. On the day of Shavuos, therefore, we underscore this concept that there is a background, there's preparation involved in Kabbalah HaTorah, and that preparation is to see the Yad Hashem and to recognize the obligations, the nationhood of Israel, which is a nation that's founded on Chesed. Okay, thank you all very much. Please.